Hi, I'm Derek Jensen. This is Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. My guest today is Christopher Ketchum. He's a freelance writer for Harper's, The New Republic, Vice, and many others. Today we discuss wildlife services. Actually, but before we say that, he has a new book out, a very good book, called This Land, How Cowboys, Capitalism, and Corruption Are Ruining the American West. That book is a product of 10 years of research and travel across the public lands of the West. But that's not what we're talking about today. Today we were talking about something called wildlife services. So, Chris, first off, thank you, as always, for your tremendous work in the world. And second, thank you for being on the program.
Yeah, thank you.
So what is wildlife services?
So I devote two chapters in my book to wildlife services because they are such a heinous operation of the federal bureaucracy. Basically, Wildlife Services is a branch of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, specifically a branch of the Animal, Plant, and Health Inspection Service at USDA, whose purpose is to slaughter wildlife to protect industry. Now, on Western public lands, most of that slaughter is conducted to benefit one industry, the livestock industry. So what we're talking about here is we're talking about a killing machine of aerial gunships, helicopters, airplanes, cyanide landmines distributed across the landscape, poison collars placed on sheep, all sorts of traps designed to kill those animals deemed predators and pests by the livestock industry. So what do they mean by predators and pests? Well, the livestock industry generally asks wildlife services to kill out wolves when the wolves threaten cows and sheep. By the tens of thousands, coyotes are slaughtered every year to protect livestock. Black bears, grizzly bears, cougars, and then a host of other animals that you wouldn't think would make, you know, would make the death list for the livestock industry, but do. So, animals like, beavers and prairie dogs. Now, both of these are keystone species in Western ecosystems. Beavers, because they dam waters and they create meadows, and they are incredibly important in arid land ecosystems for the simple fact of creating water retention in the uplands. Prairie dogs are keystone species for the simple fact that they create habitat for many other species. Their burrows are said to allow water to more efficiently percolate into aquifers. Generally, when you see prairie dogs and on the landscape in the West, you're looking at healthy grasslands. So the livestock industry wants to kill out beavers because the beavers dam up water that stockmen want to use to water their cattle and grow hay. Prairie dogs have to be eradicated in massive numbers because the prairie dogs are considered competitors for forage with cows. And on and on. During the 20th century, it's estimated that wildlife services killed something like tens of millions of animals across the West to benefit this one industry, the livestock industry. So it is a campaign of destruction, poisoning, and bloodshed that is paid for by the U.S. taxpayer to the tune of something like $150 million a year.
So to be clear, taxpayers pay $150 million a year to slaughter wildlife.
Yes. And it's very, very efficiently done. In fact, it's probably one of the, you know, we often castigate the U.S. government for being inefficient. This is a really well-run program, a smoothly oiled machine of mayhem.
And, you know, you've talked about wolves and coyotes. I want to come back to that, but something I think about every time I throw out bird seed is that, they also kill birds. It's extraordinary to me that they kill birds who are, feeding on the farms where they grow bird seed so I can have a bird feeder in my backyard. So they killed lots and lots of, for example, red-winged blackbirds, right? Or is that a different organization?
Mm-hmm. No, that's Wildlife Services. That's often done. The bird kills are often done, yes, to protect agriculture, not just livestock, but cropland operations of all types. But they also slaughter birds that threaten air traffic. So if you have large flocks of starlings or sparrows or titmice or whatever it might be, that, you know, might get caught in the engines of jets. Well, those are the Wildlife Services will go in and make sure that those birds do not pester air traffic.
So before we get back to, wolves, coyotes, et cetera, can we talk for a second about 1984 and just the name Wildlife Services? Isn't that a beautiful name?
It is the perfect Orwellian name. Now, Wildlife Services has its origins in the 1890s when its predecessor was called the Bureau of Biological Survey. When the Bureau of Biological Survey would go around and identify specifically wolves that were considered a threat to stockmen in the West. Right? So the Bureau of Biological Survey really got its teeth into this business in Colorado, where the stock industry and wolves had gone head to head for many years, and the stockmen could not successfully eliminate the wolves, so they turned to the U.S. government. They said, please help us to kill these wolves, hence the Bureau of Biological Survey. So the Bureau of Biological Survey, at that time, aids the national, let's say after 1905, the Bureau of Biological Survey is aiding the U.S. Forest Service so that the Forest Service Rangers can go out and kill the wolves. After 1931, you have the Congress passing the Animal Damage Control Act, and that basically establishes the Bureau of Animal Damage Control, a far less Orwellian name, right? That name, it's at least it sort of says what the agency does. Controls animal damage, right? Controls the animals. And in the 90s, I believe, Animal Damage Control got its name changed to Wildlife Services via some inventive bureaucrat who, you know, figured, hey, we're gonna service the wildlife with a shotgun. So that's the history in brief of the naming of Wildlife Services.
So how does it work? That, like, right now I look out the window and I see a couple of bears and, literally at this moment. And I know bears get killed a lot. So how does it actually work that, an animal gets targeted for killing? Is this just routine or does it usually take a request by the rancher? Are they basically acting as tax-paid servants of individual ranchers, or do they go out and kill the wolves, coyotes, etc., prophylactically? Do you see what I'm asking?
Okay, so yes, there's two different questions. Are you really looking at bears at your window right now?
Yeah, literally, there's
wow,
two.
Wow, those beautiful black bears.
Yeah.
Wow, that's beautiful, man.
So we need to call Wildlife Services.
You better kill them. Just kill them.
Yeah.
Just eradicate everything around you. You need a 100-mile radius around your house. You just bomb the whole forest.
A couple years ago, there was a baby bear who chewed on the tires of my truck. And so I had to buy 3 new tires over about a month because the baby, for whatever reason, thought it would be fun to chew on the tires. I did not call Wildlife Services. What I did is get the tires replaced, and then after that, I got a half dozen free ruined tires from the tire place and put them out there so that the baby bear would chew on those instead.
I see. Good.
But then again, I'm not a good Westerner.
Clearly not. So what happens with wildlife services is you can have an individual rancher who determines through questionable means that some of his livestock have been killed, say, by a pack of wolves ranging locally on the public lands nearby and or on private lands. So he calls up wildlife services. He says, "I got a problem. You got to come in and investigate." And so a wildlife services trapper will come in and do a, quote, investigation. Now, I go on at length about this in my book, about what these investigations amount to. They are, in fact, usually cursory, incompetently done, and designed almost always to substantiate the initial claim of the rancher, regardless of the evidence, right? So the rancher says, yep, these cows died by wolves, and, you know, the trapper will look around and say, well, it doesn't look like there's any evidence of a wolf attack, but we'll call it a wolf attack anyways. And thereafter, the machine starts going into gear, and after that, you've got aerial gunships prowling the area, you'll have traps laid out, you'll have, these are steel leg hold traps. They're extremely painful. I mean, when an animal gets trapped in these things, there's incredible suffering that goes on, especially given that the trap check times for wildlife services are not regulated. So trap check times can be, you know, you can leave a trap out and you just check it every week instead of every day or every other day as required by a certain federal statutes. So then this rancher who called in wildlife services usually gets satisfaction in that wildlife services is generally pretty good at tracking down and killing the wolves who supposedly did the crime, even though, as I mentioned earlier, there's often not much proof of that crime, right? So-called. So then you have, on the other hand, you have what's called prophylactic killing, in which wildlife services will go out and just start hammering local populations, say, of coyotes. And this involves flying around, usually in an airplane, and just gunning down coyotes on site. So, and they call this prophylactic killing, they call it preventative, right? Whereas killing that occurs after there is evidence, you know, suspiciously, an attack on wolves, right? That's called corrective. Okay, so you got preventative and corrective. So most of the killing by wildlife services is preventative, in that there is no actual evidence of the pack of coyotes in question, say, having actually attacked anything. They're just killed preemptively because they might go after livestock someday in the course of their lives. I mean, you get, at this point, the reader gets, you, Derek, understand that this is absurd. This is crazy. But this is how the system operates.
Reminds me of that line, that famous line from some slaughter of a certain sect in France many hundred years ago about kill them all, let God sort them out.
What, excuse me? What was it?
That reminds me of that line, famous line from history about some town in France where they were going to wipe out a certain sect of Christians, of some sort of heretical sect, and they couldn't figure out who was which sect, and the person who overran the town commanded his troops to kill them all and let God sort them out.
Yeah, well.
It's the same sort of thing, you know, kill them all and, yep, and let God sort out which coyotes were actually. But I want to go back to, go ahead.
Oh, no, I guess that is exactly the mentality.
I want to go back to the wolves, and I want to comment something else about that, which is when wolves or grizzly bears are killed, I mean, I'm sorry, even when it is shown that the wolf killed a cow or a sheep, the ranchers get paid. So can you talk about that for a moment?
Right. So it's the depredation compensation program, for want of a better phrase. And it, yes, the federal government will reimburse a rancher for the dead cow if it is proven that the cow was preyed upon by, say, a wolf or a cougar or whatever predator it might be, grizzly bear, you know, wolverine. And so this incentivizes cattlemen to falsify their claims of depredation. Because if their cows, which, you know, these are open range animals, cows and sheep, and they are subject to all sorts of inclement weather conditions, rough terrain, just an accident, a cow falls off a cliff or gets caught in a slot canyon or struck by lightning or gets lost and, I don't know, there's a baby ewe gets lost and dies. So there's many, many ways to perish on the, many ways for livestock to perish on the open range. But if you can show that they perished from a predator, then you get paid. So this is obviously a recipe for corruption of the system because of that incentivizing.
And don't they also get paid higher than market value for ones that are shown to be a predator kill or purportedly shown?
No. I think they get paid the full market value. So it could be, for example, this could be a calf that was killed, but I think they'll get paid for the full market value of that calf as if it were to have grown, basically the market value of that calf if that calf had grown to full maturity for sale.
Well, and my point on this is ultimately, I mean, this is something I've never understood. The only way I can understand this is a hatred of nature. That, honestly, if I were running cows, and we'll talk about running cows on public land in a minute, but if I was running cows, I don't care if I sell it to a slaughterhouse or if I sell the cow to, or if I get money, it doesn't matter what. It seems like it would be just fine business. I wouldn't care if my cows got eaten as long as I got paid. I don't understand why the ranchers get to cry victimization when they're getting paid for the dead cow anyway. That's what I'm getting at. It makes no sense to me. And from the rancher's perspective, it's like, yeah, I don't care if wolves eat all of them. That means I just sold my entire crop of cows.
Ah, okay. Now look, what we're talking about is we're not talking about a cost-benefit analysis here in terms of the – let me put it this way. There is a cultural ground from which these ranchers are reacting to predators, right? And that culture is about domination of the natural world. Livestock industry has always been about domination and control of nature and subjugation of the Western landscape so that cattle can be safe in a place where, you know, it's too arid, really, for this invasive species, Bos taurus, that evolved in humid Europe, and where there's tons of predators that will kill the cows as they naturally should, because, you know, wolves are going to prey on sheep. Always. It's always been that way. So when they see this predator come in and kill their cows and their sheep, it's an offense to the moral order, to the cultural moral order of their universe. And that, to a certain extent, explains the level of hysteria on the part of stockmen when confronted with the presence of predators on the Western landscapes.
And also, when we talk about ranchers on the Western landscape, we're not actually generally talking about some some homesteader running three cows. This is actually big business, right?
For the most part, public lands cattle, public lands cattle operations are for the most part run by, or rather, let me put it this way: if you look at the number of permittees, right, who take out a permit to run cows on public lands, most of those permittees are either corporations looking for tax breaks, hobbyists like Ted Turner, so rich people who view these cows as sort of playthings, mining companies that run cattle in order to also secure the water rights that come with cattle permits. And for the most part, we're not talking about hard scrabble rangeland clans, you know, the little guy eking out survival on the public lands. I mean, those people do exist, but for the most part, public lands ranching is corporate business, or is the stuff of rich people. Now, oftentimes, rich people who do own herds will contract with local cattlemen, local cowboys, to manage the ranch, right, and to manage the herd and the public land. And oftentimes, it's those guys who aren't the real owners of the property; they're just servants for the wealthy who actually own the cattle. It's oftentimes those guys, those the ranch hands and ranch managers, who will be the most vociferous and most angry when confronted with predators in the public lands, because these are guys who grew up in the culture, in the public lands ranching culture, and you know, in order to keep a job, well, they serve the absentee gentry, the aristocracy that, you know, owns most of the cattle on public lands.
So you keep saying public lands, and I think a lot of people in the West know this, but maybe people in the East don't, and maybe a lot of people in the West don't either. But we're not talking about a wolf or grizzly bear or something crawling up onto your porch and taking the sheep that is sitting 2 feet from your door. We're actually talking about, for the most part, people who are making a living off of grazing their cows or sheep on land that actually belongs to the public and is rented out to these corporations at submarket value. So we're actually talking about a huge subsidy, even if they weren't given the additional subsidy of killing predators.
Well, yeah, that's right. So this is, I mean, let's make this clear. We're talking about our land, the common land owned by every American citizen, who's in effect a co-sovereign on these lands for determining how they should be used or how they should not be used, how they should be protected and preserved. A lot of the so-called depredation on livestock does occur on public land in very wild places in the backcountry, far from people's homes, far from people's private land. And yes, Wildlife Services is yet another subsidy extended to the public lands ranching industry. You know, the total value of that subsidy with all the inputs accounted for, right? Everything from road maintenance to fence building to water diversions to submarket leasing rates for cows that you mentioned, to the operations of Wildlife Services. You know, one estimate is that the total subsidy for public lands ranching comes to something like $1 billion a year. And the remarkable thing here is that public lands ranching only accounts for 2% of all the beef produced in this country. So $1 billion for 2% of the beef nationally. At the same time, you have a regime of incredible waste and destruction to protect public lands ranchers producing that meager 2% of beef. Well, again, this is just crazy when you think about it, but there it is. It's a fact of American life, and it has been so for a long, long time.
I want to mention something that happened, I believe, a year or two ago that has just horrified me even more than all the wolf killings, was that a grizzly bear killed some chickens in somebody's ranchette in Montana, and so they shot the grizzly bear because of it. And it blew me away, because chickens are one of the most common creatures on the planet at this point, and grizzly bears are endangered. Mm-hmm. And I used to raise chickens when I lived in Spokane, and coyotes would get them once in a while. And it's like, that's the cost of having chickens run free in coyote territory. And
it
offended me on a whole nother level that you would kill an endangered species because it killed a couple of somebody who's wealthy enough to own a ranchette, and because they had some pet chickens outside. That to kill an endangered species under especially those circumstances seems horrific to me.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It's a reflection of the deranged values by which of our society. The deranged values. There's no other way to put it.
And I know I'm jumping around, but there's something else I want to come back to, too, just because I know a little bit about this, that I know in Washington, Washington State, there has been, every year, there are either multiple members or entire packs wiped out, and it's all to serve one ranching outfit. I'm sure there are others to serve others, but every year, for the last 6 or 7 years, there's a guy who, I don't remember his name right now, who absolutely refuses to take any payment for wolf kills, and any time a wolf dies, he wants the entire wolf pack wiped out. And mm-hmm. you'll see sympathetic articles about him in the newspaper saying it's driving him out of business, etc. But I did a little research, and the guy only claims to lose like 2 or 3 cows a year, and he runs, oh gosh, I think that the total that the ranch runs is like 4,000.
Yeah.
And honestly, if you can't survive a 2 cow out of 4,000 loss, then you're doing something wrong.
Mm.
I mean, I don't know. Well, just take any of that any direction you want to go. Part of it is that this one guy, yes, they're serving an industry, but in this particular case, they're serving one guy who's wealthy enough to run 4,000 head of cattle. Anyway,
yes,
you can take any direction you want.
Well, okay, so one comment that can be made, among the several comments that can be made on that, there is a simple fact that that public lands ranchers are constantly claiming to be the paragons of self-reliant business. These are the hard scrabble individualists out on the range, right? Yet, constantly whining and complaining and calling in the federal government to help them out with slaughter of these evil wolves or the other subsidies that we mentioned earlier. And meanwhile, yeah, the actual rates of depredation are, as I show in my book, very low compared to the total number of cows going out on, let's just say, the range in the northern Rockies. For example, a former Wildlife Services trapper named Carter Niemeyer told me that something like, if you have millions of beef cattle going out in the northern Rockies range, and something like 0.25% of them are lost to predators, 0.25%. So again, I think the reaction of the hysterical reaction of this this Washington rancher, whose story I'm familiar with, but whose name also escapes me right now, his hysterical reaction can be explained by, again, a cultural background in which these wolves are seen as an offense against the order of things. And conveniently, at the same time, he can trick unwary journalists into believing that this is also not just a threat to the moral order, right, but an economic threat to his very survival. But both are just lies, convenient lies. But yeah, there's it's incredible to me that this tiny minority in the American West, public lands ranchers, exercise such outsized influence on how we manage our lands. It's really incredible. Talk about capture by a tiny minority against the interests of the broad majority.
So how the people you talk to who in your experience, do the frontline workers on wildlife services are they fueled by it's just a paycheck and the Upton Sinclair, it's hard to make a man understand something when the job depends on not understanding it? Or do they think they're doing a great thing, have a claim to virtue, or do they feel bad about killing so much wildlife?
I think it depends on the trapper. I interviewed a number of ex-trappers and then read documents media coverage of trappers in the past who had quit the agency and in horror at what they had done. So there's an incredible variety of experience out there. There are some trappers, I think, who are passionately engaged in killing predators to protect the livestock industry or which is what they believe. Okay, they believe they are protecting the livestock industry, hence their passion. These are people who grow up in small rural communities where livestock ranching is a way of life. There are others who, for example, I interviewed a guy in Wyoming for my book. If you don't mind, let me read you a little bit about what he said.
Yeah, great, please.
His name is, I just call him Bob. Right, in Wyoming, because he was very much afraid of being outed in his community and being even physically threatened if he spoke out against the ranching industry. So he wrote a letter to Brooks Fay, who's an activist who has for many years worked to expose wildlife services. He wrote to Brooks Fay that he, quote, quit because of the unethical and brutal methods I was required to do as a trapper. He told Faye that, quote, the livestock people are the most bloodthirsty, animal-abusing people you could ever find, and that he was, quote, all for defunding wildlife services as it is nothing more than a government subsidy for a bunch of murderous ranchers. Now, when you hear that, that's a guy who was a trapper for many, many years. And he goes on. He says, it's the sheepmen I can't tolerate. They're just bloodthirsty rotten. A coyote or wolf to them, just something to be killed. In the county I'm in, that is in Wyoming, the sheepmen are brutes, bullies. Either you do what they want, you kowtow to them, or you quit, get fired. The ranchers think they're your boss, and they are. It's a dirty deal, and it's been going on for a long time. Most of the guys at Wildlife Services aren't as bad as they get made out to be, but they're pushed into a lot of things they don't want to do. So there you have it. I think that answers your question. There are, as I said, there are the guys who are themselves as bloodthirsty as the ranchers, and there are others who are just getting a paycheck, and they're like, God damn, I don't want to do this, but I need the money. So, like, yeah.
And you know, we've talked about, you know, the horrors of the cyanide landmines and everything else. Maybe this is a bit maudlin, but it's also simply true that we're not also not simply talking about adults, but there are, I've heard about denning, killing entire dens of pups of various wildlife species.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the practice, and I'm not sure if this is still ongoing, but the practice for many years was to track down a coyote den where the pups are holed up and smoke them out. So set a fire around the mouth of the den, and then as the pups come out, they get clubbed or they themselves burn up. They also use or had used at some point a phosphorus compound called a den smoker. And again, here's Dick Randall, who was a wildlife services trapper in Wyoming, like the aforementioned Bob, who I interviewed. And Dick Randall used this den smoker. Suffocating the pups was the theory, he wrote, but they'd often scramble for cracks of light at the entrance. You could hear them howling when they hit the flames and burned alive. The pups ran into the chemical fire trying to get out, and it would eat through their tissue, hiss and smolder right into their guts when they were still clawing at the blocked entrance. So, yeah, that's one of the practices. Again, paid for by the U.S. government. One of the practices of our government on our land. Which we should be proud, right?
And this is not only, just last week, I believe it was, Wildlife Services was poisoning prairie dogs in Colorado. And, mm-hmm. This is just, no matter where you look, there's, and I'm presuming that when they kill blackbirds, they use poison, presumably. So basically there's poisoning. I think you've done a wonderful job of this, but we have about 7 or 8 minutes left. And before we talk about what people can do, you can say the numbers, you can say the amount of money, everything else, but how do we convey to people the utter horror of what is happening at public expense on public lands?
Well, I think of those coyote pups having their guts burning from phosphorus compound. Just think of that over and over and over again. And then, if you want to do something about it, call your congressperson and ask, are you voting to allocate money to Wildlife Services operations year after year? Because most congresspeople are. call up the USDA and call up APHIS, the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service that runs or that oversees directly the Wildlife Services program. Call up Congressman Peter DeFazio, of Oregon, who is one of the few representatives in Congress who has stood up to Wildlife Services and attempted to pass legislation to defund their programs, to change substantially the congressional mandate that Wildlife Services got with the Animal Damage Control Act of 1931, basically revise it, if not repeal it. So I think the thing here is that you have stockmen who are very politically engaged, right? They're constantly complaining to local officials, county officials, their county commissioners, their state elected officials, and their congressionals, right? that these goddamn predators are a problem. And so you have a lot of people in officialdom listening to this very vocal constituency. What you don't have opposing that vocal minority constituency is the great majority of Americans who are aghast at these very cruel practices. So what you need civic engagement. I mean, I repeat this over and over in talking about my book. You need a citizenry that is enraged and engaged. And until that happens, wildlife services will continue on and on and on, slaughtering and killing with your money and with not much scientific basis for the killing. It's like it's irrational killing.
Yeah, I've heard that actually killing coyotes actually ironically or paradoxically leads to coyote population explosions actually because they reproduce. Is that correct?
That's in my book as well. Yes. So I interviewed a guy named Rob Wilgus of the University of Washington who looked into that. And found that, yeah, as you basically disrupt pack structures, wolves and coyotes, you actually increase the amount of attacks on livestock. So it's, but that is quite helpful to wildlife services, right? So they kill more animals, they kill more coyotes. It produces more depredation on livestock, meaning they have to come back and kill more coyotes, which produces more depredation of livestock, right? It's a closed circle where you know what? They always get more funding, and there's more killing to be done, and on and on.
You know, we haven't really talked about this, and there isn't a lot of time to talk about it, but it destroys local social structures, and often the older members of the community, of the predator community, will keep sort of crazy younger members in check. And
that's right.
A great example of that happened earlier this year. I mentioned earlier, I see bears, and I see bears all the time. And earlier this year, there was a mother bear showed up with a baby, and she was around for a while, and then the baby disappeared. And I looked into it. And sometimes males will kill babies to bring the female into heat. Mm-hmm. And that was seeming kind of weird to me. So somebody else did some more research for me. It ends up, I know it's a long story, but I think it's really interesting. It ends up that normally there will be females have territory and then males have sort of a meta territory, and a big male will make sure that other younger males don't kill the babies. He'll basically keep the youngsters in check. Mm-hmm. But if somebody shoots the old male, and then there's chaos for a while, and you end up with younger males killing the babies. Mm-hmm. And so the point is that if you had wildlife services come in and kill a pack leader or disrupt a pack, I'm just validating what you just said, or saying it's the same thing you just said in a different way. It's going to create chaos, which is going to create some more just strange behavior that's harmful to everybody around.
Well, that's exactly right. So, and that is what Rob Wilgus, and by the way, I have to correct what I said earlier, his affiliation earlier. It's Washington State University, not the University of Washington. That is exactly what Rob Wilgus found out, that the disruption of the social structure of predators, whether it be, coyote packs, wolf packs, or local mountain lion populations, and as you remark, also black bear population, the disruption of that social structure leads then to all sorts of behavior that wasn't occurring previously. So, for example, the adult mountain lions, right, will indeed prevent younger mountain lions from going after livestock. It's you know, what we're talking about is we're talking about just, if you're going to approach all this slaughter with a scientific method, right, that doesn't justify the slaughter, but it would at least make sense from a bureaucratic perspective. But they're not even approaching it with a scientific method. It's just randomized violence meted out against predators without any understand, without any ecological or behavioral understanding.
So we have a couple minutes left, and let's pretend that you are able to do one thing but not another. The thing you're not able to do is eliminate public lands ranching on the West. You don't get to do that. But right. You do get to completely defund APHIS. I'm sorry, defund Wildlife Services.
Right.
So what do you think would happen? What would that lead to?
I think you'd have a lot of vigilantism. I think you'd have a lot of ranchers going out and killing these things, these predators themselves.
The three S's. Shoot, shovel, and shut up.
Shoot, shovel, and shut up. I think you'd have widespread illegal distribution of poisons, such as banned thallium sulfate and the sodium fluoroacetate. I think you'd have a lot more sodium cyanide spread across the landscape. I think you'd find more carcasses of animals poisoned with those compounds. I don't think that would accomplish much, frankly. Getting rid of Wildlife Services. I mean, you get rid of Wildlife Services, then you'd also have to have an accompanying regime of enforcement of protections for predators. And we don't have that.
No. So you want people to call their congresspeople or to get engaged, and if it's not merely to dump Wildlife Services, I mean, so are you suggesting that this problem won't be solved until public lands ranching is also eliminated in the West?
Yeah, I think that's ultimately where we'd have to go with this. Yeah, you really have to eliminate public lands ranching if you want to protect predators on a widespread scale on and big ecologically relevant landscapes, right? I think it begins though, with that effort toward eradicating the livestock industry on public lands begins with searing into your consciousness that image of the coyote pup's guts burning from phosphorus compound, and then go from there. Use that as your inspiration, because that's what we're really talking about when we talk about the livestock industry in the West.
Well, thank you for that. And I just want to reiterate something you said earlier, that even if you got rid of all public lands ranching in the West, that's only 2% of beef production in the United States.
Right. So if you're a meat eater, it's not going to affect the price of steak. Okay, you still get your hamburgers. It's okay.
We could probably come from Georgia anyway.
Right. All right. One of the biggest public lands ranching states is Nevada. Maryland, the little state of Maryland, produces like 10 times as much beef, or 20 times, some incredible figure. I forget what it is, but an exponentially greater amount of beef than all the expanses of Nevada. So
this is, as they say, really low-hanging fruit in terms of environmental reward for economic cost.
Right.
Well, is there anything else you want to say about Wildlife Services?
Just that they need to go, and the only way to get them to go is for the public to make them go.
Thank you so much for your constant advocacy for wild nature, and thank you for being on the program, and I would like to thank those for listening. My guest today has been Christopher Ketchum. This is Derek Jensen for Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.